Fenway Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as always, in person. You can see us very carefully if you stare at your radio dial long enough, I'm sure. Don't do it while you're driving. But here to discuss some things that have been going on, and Lord knows there's a lot of things going on right now. And it's impacting the market here and there. And we'll discuss that and the whys and the where we're going from here and all that. Plus, we'll talk about all kinds of things that we want to talk about, unless you have something you would prefer to talk about. And that's as easy as picking up the phone and dialing 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK. Then callers will always go to the head of the line, and we'll talk about whatever it is you want to talk about today, whether it has to do somehow or other with finance or investing or insurance or any financial topic. We'll handle them all. I know today we're going to be talking a little bit about the JEA and the proposal for privatizing that, since we have promised. And that one, I promise you, is not a here's what I would do type of QED answer. And that's not a simple question, and it doesn't, therefore, have a simple answer. So we'll talk about some of the ramifications of that. We've got some other things going on. We've got some very interesting market predictions that, in my humble opinion, are pretty much as dumb as anything I've read in a long time. So we'll go over that a little bit. And a few other little goodies, some outside-the-box thinking when it comes to Roth IRAs and conversion to. And just, I've got more stuff today than we got time to talk about it. And that's always fine. But despite that, there's always next week. So if you'd rather fill up the time slot with some comments of your own or discussions about something you're concerned with or wondering about, taxes or anything nowadays, just please pick up the phone and give us a call. We will have a trivia question. And I do want to talk just very briefly about last week's trivia, which I did not answer. And the answer has actually changed in a week. So I'll bring that up, too. And I don't like it, folks. I really don't like it. And I'll tell you exactly what I mean probably at the beginning of the second quarter of the show. Meanwhile, it was an unusual, what I call a Clint Eastwood market the last 3 weeks. We had the good week. Then we had the bad week, and this week we had the ugly week.
Well, I don't know how ugly it was. It wasn't that bad.
I thought it was ugly. It didn't feel good. Nothing felt right. When you open up in the morning, you wake up early, the futures are up big time, the market opens big time, sits there for a while and thinks about it, and then crashes and sells into the close. That I don't like, and that was the opposite of what had been going on recently. And I, as usual, I think they're not really that much behind it, except everybody's kind of playing wait and see. I'd also like to congratulate everyone who has already broken their brackets on the Sweet 16, because nobody was going to call the Central Middle School in Baltimore over Virginia, and I think that's who they sent. So, neener, neener to everybody who lost money. I didn't predict it either.
The good news is almost everyone else in your pool also missed that. So
that's exactly
that
right.
It just depends how far you had Virginia going.
Exactly right. Anyway, I'll let Adam tell you his view of this week, which doesn't sound like it was quite as negative as mine, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
But to be young and optimistic.
We gave a little bit of last week back, but it wasn't too painful. The market's a little directionless right now. There just doesn't seem to be any momentum, either positive or negative. But, hey, at least we didn't see any 1,000-point days, so that's
true.
Always good. As you mentioned, a couple times this week, the futures were up in the morning, the market opened up, and then we just saw it kind of drift lower the rest of the day. Not a great trend, but on Friday that didn't happen. We didn't give it back, so we were able to maintain some gains on Friday going into the close. So that's usually a pretty good sign.
I'd rather have it happen on Friday than any other day of the week.
Exactly. The market was just kind of blah this week. There wasn't anything that really stood out except for Steinmark, local company. They had been in some real trouble, actually. Their stock had gone from $7 down to about 40 cents, roughly.
The product of some poor choices that were made along the way.
Yeah, and they came out and beat their earnings. They still lost a little bit of money, but it was almost a break-even report, and their stock
That's with reacted. A lot of corrections, writing off inventory and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and their stock reacted very positively. At one point, it was up about 170% the day after earnings. Mm-hmm. It didn't close there, but it did make it back over a dollar. So if they can now maintain that for 10 days, they won't get delisted, which they were in danger of.
Right.
Because the NASDAQ will delist you if you spend 30 days below a dollar and then don't get it back above for 10 days. Mm-hmm. So as long as they stay above that important dollar a share mark, they should be okay.
And we'll talk about some ways to play that, too, if you happen to be one of the people caught up in it.
Yeah.
Sort of a novel way to look at something like that.
So the NASDAQ was the winner this week, but it was only the winner by losing the least. It was down 1%. It's kind of been the trend this year as the NASDAQ is up 8.4%, by far the largest of the three major indexes. The S&P lost just 1.2% and is now up just under 3% on the year. And the Dow, also following the trend, had the worst week, down 1.5%, and is now up just under 1% for the year, but still positive. But after the February we had, who knew that all three would still be up year to date? So I'm moderately pleased with that.
And who knew after January that there'd even be a discussion?
Yeah, exactly.
We've had more volatility in the few weeks of this year than we had all of last year put together.
No kidding. Last year was a very unusual year, though. This is more normal. Utilities was the only sector in the black this week, gaining 2.5%, while materials got hit the hardest, down over 3%. Financials, industrials, and consumer staples were all down around 2% as well. And then telecom and consumer staples, that two areas that, along with utilities, that have struggled all year, were down around 0.5%. So they were kind of the winners, quote unquote. The U.S. wasn't the only market that suffered. The international markets also gave up some of this year's gains. Brazil, which had been the clear winner year to date, lost 3%. And Russia, which was just behind Brazil, gave up almost 3%. Then we saw emerging markets drop over 1%, and the EAFE index was down just under 0.5%. So just all around the world, stock markets this week did not react very positively.
They don't like it when ours is going down.
Well, and then a lot of that they're attributing to potential trade wars with the tariff.
That's where it all began.
Yeah, that's why you're seeing the large caps get hit the worst, because the theory is that they sell more internationally and could be damaged most by tariff wars.
A tempest in a teapot.
Commodities fared a little bit better than other areas this week, with the index only dropping about 18 basis points. Oil was up slightly, while natural gas continues its slide, and gold and silver both dropped as well, which is unusual when the market's down, but we've been seeing it a lot this year.
Yes, we have.
Where gold and silver are dropping with the market instead of going against it.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
Yeah, it's unusual. There's a bunch of economic data. I'm not going to have time right now. I'll do it after the break, but... Mm-hmm.
And it was good.
It was overall pretty good, yeah.
No complaints. Even some of the stuff that they said wasn't all that good
was
better
good.
Than it sounded.
Yeah, I agree.
People can interpret, well, we know that from politics and everything else. People can interpret the same things, the same visual evidence, the same economy, the same everything, and come out with two completely different opinions about it. And whenever they disagree with me, then, of course, they're wrong.
And then also there are certain things that the market likes that aren't really good economic signs for the country.
All right. So we'll talk about when we get back. We'll talk about just how good things really are. And I'll set up the trivia question. So do not go anywhere. We will be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And our trivia question this week has to do with the fiduciary rule. And we kind of have to set it up a little bit. For those of you who do know the term fiduciary, it is the standard by which people like Adam and I are required to operate. And what it means is that you have clients and your interests always have to come second to you. The client's interests are always first. That's what it means to be a fiduciary. Now, I've been in this business for about 17 years. Adam's been in it for a number of years. And it never would have occurred to either of us to do it any other way. It just seems to make sense to me. How are you going to be successful managing other people's money unless you care more about them than you? And then it always comes back. And it works just fine for everybody to do it that way. And yet the conservatives, I've railed about this for a long time, it is the conservatives in Washington, D.C. that are trying to shoot down the new fiduciary rule, which the government is trying to put into place on a more extensive basis than it is now. If you're a CFP, as Adam and I both are, you are automatically required to become a fiduciary. If you are a member of NAPFA, which Adam and I are, you are required to be a fiduciary. So if you ever want to find out if your potential financial advisor is a fiduciary, first off, you ask. And then you see, do they have the qualifications of membership in NAPFA or CFP or something like that? And if they don't, ask them why not. Because otherwise, they're likely going to be selling something on a commission basis to you. And when there's a commission on the table, you never know what is being sold to you, whether it's best for the advisor or best for you, which circles me right back to the trivia question. It is estimated that the lack of fiduciary advice costs investors how many billion dollars a year? And I'll take it plus or minus $2 billion, which shows you it ain't peanuts.
It's a big number.
Yeah. And that is just excess money paid out. And Adam and I have said for a long time, following this whole fiduciary process for the last couple of years, that the people in government who want to kibosh it, and it was just knocked down by the U.S. Court of Appeals in the 5th District in New Orleans, and now there's a parallel case going on in the appeals court in Washington, D.C., after which time we're pretty sure it's going to go direct to the Supreme Court. So hopefully it will become the law of the land. It's important because a lot of retirement plans are subject to ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act in 1974, as amended many times. And they're trying now to extend that to IRAs, which are not ERISA-based. And it makes sense to everybody who doesn't have a commission to get on it, apparently. But there's a lot of people against it and a lot of people for it, and the people on the right side are for it. So how much does it cost investors to not have that rule in place every year? In billions, plus or minus two for the answer. A quick word about last week's question. We're talking about long-term care and wrapping up that series. And we're discussing that several states have care laws, CAR, caregiver advised, record, and enable laws now that require them to educate you. But they have what's called filial responsibility laws. What that means is, your debts can be sought to be compensated back by your children. And the first rule of learning estate planning is that you don't inherit your parents' bills. You know, whatever debts they have, whatever bills they have, they're their problem. When they die, they're gone. You can do whatever you want to do from a moral standpoint, but you don't get them. Filial laws betray that. And I don't think it's right, and Adam doesn't think it's right. Fortunately, Florida does not have filial responsibility. Georgia does, for those of you listening up north, so to speak. The answer for last week was how many states have the filial laws. It was 28, and this week the number's 29.
Oh, which one?
I didn't read which one was added,
okay.
But it was updated to 29 this week. And if you folks ever hear about anybody in our state legislatures that is advising or trying to introduce a filial responsibility law, please call the show and tell us, and we will get on it right away with a big campaign to stop it. It is not right that today's kids should inherit the long-term care problems of their parents, period.
And it just opens up a can of worms, because where does it stop? Are you now responsible for your kids' student loans if you didn't co-sign for them? Are you... You know, do you inherit your parents' student loans? Or I mean, there's just, you could apply this to so many situations where you have or if your brother is an idiot and goes out and racks up a bunch of debt, are you responsible for that as a sibling? I mean, where does it stop?
No. It absolutely won't fly past us anyway. Good morning, Pat.
Hello. That Peter Brook chocolate sure was good.
Glad you enjoyed it. And so is Ken Bales.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't really say that it was sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. But that was right. That was apparently the most recent of the winner's gifts, right?
Yep. And I have about five more of them to give away. So
all right.
If you win today, that's what you'll get, a $25.
Now, okay. Before you say anything, you can only win once in 30 days.
Right, right.
Well, but you can win all you want. You just won't get any more Peter Brook for 30 days.
That's okay. I don't need all those calories.
I hear you.
Sure was good.
I hear you.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, I hope somebody wins today.
I hope so, too. So what's on your mind?
Okay. What's on my mind? I just wanted to
Well, you can still take a guess.
Well, yeah, sure.
You're welcome to
like
guess.
I said, you can win. You just can't win a prize.
$4.7 billion?
Way too low.
Ooh.
How's that for scary?
That was the 2017 amount, according to some website, but I don't know.
Okay, well,
way too low.
Our sources, yeah, our sources, which may not be the same as yours, have it considerably higher.
Yeah,
and I know there are various estimates.
Exactly,
and I want the most extreme one just because it's more fun.
Absolutely. Well, you guys have fun, and I hope somebody gets a higher number.
Good. I hope so, too. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Pat.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye. They're real nice folks. All right. You were wrapping up something on the market.
Economic data.
Yeah.
So there was a bunch of positive economic data this week, and the one thing that kind of surprised me was that the market didn't react better to the inflation data, which actually came in basically in line with estimates.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think the market would love that and probably trade higher on that news, but that didn't happen. So, but basically the CPI came in right at the estimate at 0.2 and PPI, again, right in line with the estimates. So that's really what the market has been looking for over
yeah,
the last.
Yeah, they want inflation. Everybody
no,
wants
the market
some.
Does not want inflation.
They don't want
doesn't
too
want
little.
Excess inflation.
Yes,
yeah.
They didn't want it to be 0.5 like it was in January.
Right.
And it wasn't. So they should have been happy.
Yeah. But anyways, that was a little bit of a surprise. There was one really bad area, really bad report this week, and it was retail sales. The estimate for February was for an increase of 0.3%, mm-hmm. and the reading came in down negative 0.1%.
Mm-hmm. But if you take out the automotive sector.
Autos and gas, and then it was right in line with expectations. Mm-hmm. So there is something going on with the automobile industry right now. I've heard it anecdotally from a car salesman that I met, mm-hmm. and she was very adamant that it's been going on for years.
Yes.
And we're kind of seeing it in the numbers now. So I don't know if it's kind of a boom bust thing because so many people delayed car purchases during the recession and then auto sales really spiked post-recession when people started to get back on their feet because they were driving 13, 15-year-old cars. And so now maybe we're just seeing a little bit of a aftershock of that. I'm not sure.
Well, remember, you don't obviously, back in the early 70s, I worked for Walker Muffler Company. And Walker Muffler had an incredible computer system that predicted exactly how many failures of mufflers and tailpipes there would be in every year for every model.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not made out of stainless steel. They were made out of regular old carbon steel, and they rusted terribly, especially in areas like near the beach or where you get salt on the roads in the wintertime. At the same time, Walker was developing stainless steel mufflers. And we all knew, because we all talked about it, that we were putting ourselves out of business, basically, mm-hmm. by doing the stainless steel mufflers. The saying then was, and it was true, it's us or somebody else
yep.
going to do it, because stainless steel was becoming big. Car makers who were making Fords and Chevys at the time, they would predict that you would be changing cars every 3 or 4 years, too, because you pretty much had to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you take a car built in the 21st century, or even the last year of the 20th century, like my wife's, and they just keep running. And they're very expensive and worth it. So you don't buy one real often. Then there's the trend to public transportation. There's the trend to Uber, driverless Lyft. Cars. Yeah, ride your Uber, ride your Lyft. There are a lot of reasons to think that the car industry is in a long, long, long and slow decline. And that's something that we're going to have to live with as a country because we can't stop it, the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a whole topic around this. We could probably go into it for a whole show at some point.
Sure.
Maybe we will.
But if you look at the other forms of retail sales, including non bricks and mortar, they're doing pretty well.
Oh, yeah. And January was actually revised upwards,
right,
to look a lot less bad. So overall, it was a bad report, but it wasn't the end of the world.
No. And some of the other things, housing starts and that sort of thing. The only reason housing starts looked bad was because of the multifamilies. The individuals are fine. There's still a shortage. Don't go anywhere. There's lots more after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And trivia question is still open. How many billions of dollars is it estimated by some sources that are wasted on bad advice because the people giving that advice are not fiduciaries? And that, it is a big number, trust me. It's just so indescribably ridiculous. But Adam and I just shake our heads sometimes. Anyway, let's see. Well, I wanted to wrap something up. I don't even remember what it was.
We were talking about economic data and
That you'll hear that there was a problem with housing. There was a big, big drop in housing starts, and really, all it was the multiple family units. The individual housing market is still in something of a quandary. There aren't enough houses for sale. And anybody in the business will tell you there's a complete lack of inventory. There's a similar problem developing in the workforce. Did you see the JOLTS number?
I did. It was a record, actually.
Yes. There are now, very officially, people who need qualified workers, and that can be labor, it can be white collar, it doesn't matter. There is a growing body of unfilled job openings in this country. And I'm telling you, folks, if you haven't been paying attention to us when we say now is the time to leave your job and get a new one, you want more money? Go for it.
It's out there.
It is out there. And if you haven't been in the workforce for a while and you would rather be, now is your time, folks.
That report was for January, and it showed a 11.3% increase from December in open jobs, 6.3 million, new record, and jobless claims fell, and the NFIB Small Business Optimism report came in near an all-time high, and taxes and government red tape has plummeted down the list as the top problems. It is now hiring good workers. That is the biggest problem facing small businesses.
And if you are a little dismayed, as most of us are, at how little wages have risen so far, hang on.
Yeah, it's coming. I promise it's
coming. Oh, it's coming. And you can do your part by taking initiative for yourself.
Absolutely.
So, and I'm all for it, folks. If you can make more money, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely the right thing to do. Now, speaking of go for it, a couple weeks ago, we got asked their opinion about the proposed sale of JEA, which people who've been around here for a long time know, even though it is our electric utility, it is not in private hands. It is in public hands. And there are people out there who would like to privatize it. Now, I always come down on the side of private business over public. Everybody knows that. But. This is not the simplest question ever asked, and Adam promised he would look into it and give us the size of it so we can make maybe a little more organized opinion, each of us. I'm not going to tell you what to think, but we'll tell you what's going on. So what did you find?
Well, It's I found that this is a really interesting topic. There's a lot more going on downtown than what I initially thought. So it's a pretty big deal, and there are definitely two camps on this, and they are really going at each other.
Is it down political divides, or is it just it's more or less an independent decision?
It's not along party lines or anything like that. It is basically the mayor's administration against the city council, and it's getting ugly. But basically, here's the timeline. On Valentine's Day, February 14th, Lenny Curry's administration presented a plan to sell, or a pitch to sell, JEA. It has to be approved by the city council. So obviously he brought it to them. The valuations range from $7.9 billion to $10.1 billion. And of that, profits could be somewhere between $2.9 billion to $6.4 billion on the sale. That's a lot of money. So there's that concern. And I don't say that because it is a lot of money. I say that because it's a one-time influx of cash to the city, and how do we spend it? I think that needs to be addressed before I can say yay or nay, I'm for it or against it.
I say cut the sales tax.
Yeah, I mean, we just did that, extended our penny or half penny to fund the pension problem.
Fund the pension, give the money back.
Exactly. That would be great. But again, that never happens. So
no.
JEA said that they would not move without a commitment from the community. So they need the city council representing the community to be on board with this plan before they do anything. And it looks like there's a personal rift between the mayor and the council president. And that's where things get pretty ugly. The next meeting was on March 8th, and there was a group that offered to pay. It was a philanthropic foundation that offered to pay to help the city council examine the idea. No idea who that was. They were anonymous, and I don't think they really committed to even doing that. So the city council's pretty heavily against this, it feels like, at this point.
Well, it's nice to see them being so open-minded when somebody else will pay for the study and they don't want it.
Well, but I think the fear was that it was a buddy of Lenny Curry's who's going to, you know, be pro, and that's my guess anyway.
There's probably something to that.
On the 13th, there were some messages against the privatization put out, and the Florida Committee for Infrastructure Investment was put together to stop the exploration of selling JEA, and they said there'd be a meeting on the 14th, which actually got delayed till the 15th. And now Lenny Curry saying that he has taken no stance on the JEA sale letter or sale, and that there was a rumor of a letter that he sent to their top brass saying that they would give them bonuses if they stayed on throughout the sale. He denies having sent a letter or anyone in his administration. And then that meeting got really heated when the JEA CEO and the mayor's chief administrative officer refused to go under oath. After 30 minutes of debate, they got up and walked out of the meeting. So that was a city council meeting, a little bit of drama there, and nothing got decided. So we're going to see what happens this week. The story's still developing, but it's looking like a pretty big argument between the mayor's camp and the city council camp.
Sounds to me like we need a special counsel.
No. Please, no.
Well, that's going to be interesting. If it were easy, all we'd say is, of course you sell it. It's ridiculous for an organization like that to be run by the city. But it's not that easy because it's a pretty darn good utility.
Yeah, and it's a legal monopoly, so you have a license to print money. And one of the people on Lenny Curry's side actually brought up a really good point saying, yes, it's been a great deal because it's a legal monopoly, but will that last forever? And he didn't think that it would, obviously, so sell it while it's at its peak value, get the most out of it, get the city some of our debts paid off and on better financial footing. Not a bad argument.
I don't know, and maybe somebody out there knows some people work for JEA. I know they did have a pension plan and were part of the big problem. But I don't know if they still have that for new people, which would be interesting to know if anybody happens to have that. Now, I've related it real early this morning when Adam and I were shooting back and forth some ideas. Back in the, as far back as the 60s, but mostly in the 70s, what was happening in all the big cities was that the cable companies were starting to wire up the cities and bring cable into people's homes. And of necessity, kind of like the electric lines, they are they have to be a legal monopoly, because you're not going to have three or four cable companies laying lines next to each other.
Just too expensive.
So you have to give them some time frame at least to amortize their cost. But what happened with that one was that every city council member in places like Washington, D.C. and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, they all got fabulously wealthy.
I wonder how that happened.
They made good investments.
Right.
And it was well known. And in fact, if you Google the mayor of Milwaukee back then, I can't remember his name. He's about 6 foot seven, so you know which one it was. I don't know if he's out of jail yet or not, actually. There was so much going wrong with the legalized monopolies that it left a very, very bad taste in my mouth. Well, then I get down here and I watch JEA and think, well, you know, our bills are pretty reasonable. They've really upgraded the service level. We've been very happy in the 26 years we've been down here to see the difference. It used to be the first thunder or first lightning, you quick run and get a flashlight and a candle because you knew it was going out. That just hardly ever happens anymore. It's such a good thing. All right, Chuck, we have a caller on the line, but we've only got a few seconds. We'll pick you up exactly after we come back from the break, if you don't mind. All right, when we come back, we'll see what Chuck has to say. Maybe it's about JEA, maybe he's guessing the trivia, maybe both. You never know. So don't go anywhere, and we'll try to wrap up this and other topics on the other side. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And the phone lines are heating up, so without any delay, good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, Steve and Adam. Since you were commenting on the fiduciary rule, I used to work in compliance for a firm years ago, and I had to review suitability for variable and fixed annuities and other products, and I think the fiduciary rule is a great thing because the sales of variable annuities to unsophisticated, unsuspecting investors has plummeted. And I think if for no other reason, the fiduciary rule served its purpose in reducing the sale of variable annuities, which a lot of people should never have, especially seniors.
We couldn't agree with you more.
Absolutely. We've always said the same thing.
Yeah, about 95%, which is one of those statistics that I'm roughly estimating. You know, 87.321% of all statistics are made up. But I've always said about 95% of variable annuities, there would have been a much better way to solve the problem that the client had at a heck of a lot less money. And I believe that to this day.
Yeah, I saw the sale of those variable annuities because the people selling them were making so much money in that, and they were not making a lot of money in the other products.
Right.
So they were pushing them, and they were pushing compliance people to the limit because, I mean, it's really, really hard to justify suitability on a variable annuity with a senior citizen. I think the fiduciary rule is a really good thing, and it's probably the only thing I agree with that came out of the Obama administration.
It's funny because I've said that exact same thing myself. Elizabeth Warren and Barack Obama, I agree with you for the first and probably the last time in my life, but it's absolutely true. And now I want to take it one step further than that and take the equity index annuities and have them reclassified as variables. I think that would be the next logical step in protecting unwitting consumers. I don't know. Did you ever get involved with those?
No. But I will say this. I'm not against annuities totally. I mean,
no,
we aren't either.
There are some good purposes, like somebody that's very wealthy that's afraid of being sued. Having a fixed annuity is a good thing because that's one of the few things that'll protect you from a lawsuit. So
exactly.
I think there are some good things out there like fixed immediate payout annuities.
Absolutely. And we have clients that have them. We have family members that have them, and they're great products if they're used for what they are designed to be used for.
We recommended one just this week in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Where the lady was short on her needed lifetime annual income. And there's only one way to solve that problem. The annuity is for that. You need X amount of lifetime income. I can't promise you that in an IRA or anything like that. I'd be tossed out of the business. So you buy a single premium immediate annuity, the SPIA, and problem solved, just like that. The problem is the salesman will want to sell you one big enough that first he wants to find out how much money you've got so you can buy the whole thing. And that's not solving the problem. So.
Exactly.
But you got out of it, huh?
Well, I'm still in the industry. I've been in the industry as long as you have, Steve, but I just do something different now.
Good.
And, but, I mean, that taught me a lot. My brief time in compliance really was an eye-opening experience.
Yeah, we shudder when the word compliance is spoken, but the good parts are badly needed, and it's unfortunately not everybody has the ethics that are required to do a good job for other people. Just the truth, nothing more. You want to take a shot at the trivia?
Oh, I have no idea. I heard you, but I just don't know. I mean, I'll say $20
billion. You are really
just
close, but a little high.
Yeah.
Nice guess, though. All right, we appreciate it. We love your comments. We couldn't agree with you more. And the consumer can't be expected to protect himself or herself. It's just too complicated. Period.
Exactly. And I deal with people like that every single day, and I know you guys do too. And I was in my doctor's office this week, and I said, the amount of financial education in this country is an absolute disgrace.
It really is.
They don't even teach you to balance a checkbook anymore. It's ridiculous.
It is awful.
You know, have you ever heard us talk about the Jefferson National product that is designed for people like us, fee-only planners? You can transition into it and save yourself a bunch of money. And we do a lot of those because the cost of getting out of the old VAs that aren't good for people is so high. This is a way to at least recoup some money because of the lifetime cost of the thing. But there's nothing better than to not have sold it in the first place. That's our viewpoint. So anyway, we appreciate it. Good luck. Keep listening. We really like hearing from you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Don, good morning.
Hey.
What's up?
I want to get through with you real quick because you ain't got much time now.
Yeah, it's getting there.
Do you have any idea how deep in debt this country is?
$21 trillion plus unfunded liabilities.
I started looking at this, and I started calling around. Let me tell you something right now. This country is a deep debt, deeper than you even can imagine.
Yep.
It ain't just the federal government with trillions of dollars. It's these county governments.
Yep. Unfunded liabilities.
I cannot believe that we're almost $44 trillion in the state of Florida in these county governments in debt. Can you believe that?
Yes, because I know who runs them.
And then I have people like the Jacksonville government over there sitting in chairs from them mayor's office and the council. They want to sell the JEA. And all that's going to do is drive the cost of electricity up for the people over there. And I want you to know that after very carefully looking at this thing, I don't know what we're going to do to survive this. We fought World War II, and then we got out of it, but I don't think we're going to get out of this because this debt is based right down to the family's back pocket. And I don't think the family got the money to pay it. Do you?
I absolutely agree with you.
I mean, I know we don't have
it. No.
Hopefully we can generate it, but we definitely don't have it.
Nope. It only took 6 months to go from $21 trillion to $22
trillion. No, 20 to 21.
20 to 21. What's going to happen when all of a sudden this debt comes due and we have to start doing things that we don't want to do? And, we need ships, we need airplanes, we need pilots, and we need to balance the budget. How are we going to do all that?
Stay tuned. We couldn't agree with you more, and nor can we give you the answers, because the answers are still blowing in the wind. We got to start voting better, for one thing.
We got to start being responsible for our own actions. The government today is completely off their rockers. They want somebody to pay their debts, what they want. and run your payoff like Jacksonville Electric Authority, which I'm mad as hell over.
I agree with you. Hey, I got to run. I got another call. I appreciate your comments. We'll be talking about this JEA thing as time goes on, you know. So, thanks for the call.
And Don was the one that brought that up.
Yeah, it was. He was. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to take a guess.
Sure.
18.
You are the winner. The actual number from the survey group that I got this from is 17, and I said plus or minus 2, which meant that 15 to 19, which is why Chuck's 20 was just that feather too high. That's scary. $17 billion wasted dollars a year because we do not force people to comply with a very simple rule that says put your client's interest ahead of your own. So, yes, ma'am, you got it, and I'll put you on hold. We'll get your address. And you like Peterbrook?
Thank you so much.
All right. Be good. Everybody likes Peterbrook, don't they?
I don't know what's not to like.
Well, it's a local product, too.
It's chocolate. I mean, come on.
I've met those folks. They're pretty nice people. Anyway, gosh, we don't have much time left. Did you have any little bits and pieces to wrap up?
One thing. If you have a Toys R Us gift card, they declared bankruptcy this week and are closing. Your gift card is only good for about the next about 25 days. It was 30 days when I wrote this on Wednesday, I think. So go in and use it as quickly as possible.
We dug ours out yesterday, and I went online and checked the value, and it's still got $8.32 left on it. And if anybody out there thinks that we won't make a trip out there to spend $8.32, you haven't known me long enough. And that's the truth. All right. Well, this was really fun today. It went very fast, as all the fun days do. We've got lots and lots more for next week. So thanks for being with us. Tune in again next week. And keep your powder dry, as they say, because, man, there's a lot going on in this market, and it's not going to become stable overnight. But don't be afraid. Things are good. Trust us. All right. See you next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.